understand.
If it was a snake, it would bite me. Got it. Thank
you.
Yeah.
Oh, that Wily Umbrella.
Oh, that Wily Umbrella,
yes. Hi, you're listening to Go See a Show, the Off-Off-Broadway podcast. On this episode, we have our first returning guest, Martin Dockery, who was actually on the show only recently. However, this time around, instead of the monologue style for which he is commonly known, Martin is joined by Vanessa Cannell in Oh, That Wily Snake, an original script written by Martin a while back that he's pulled from the archive and has recently toured on the festival circuit to great acclaim. There may be some minor plot spoilers in our conversation, so fair warning, but I assure you it won't take away from your enjoyment of the production, which takes place around a magic flying mattress center stage. Take a listen.
So great work, y'all.
Thank you.
Martin Dockery, welcome back to Go See a Show.
Thank you.
You're the first repeat offender.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, how long have you been doing
this? This is the 19th episode, I think.
Okay, all right.
So it's not, you know, it's not like
yeah,
five,
but still, but yeah. 19th episode, how do you do one a week? Or
I try to do one or two a week, but, you know, through January, okay, it's been a little bit quiet. Nobody's really doing many shows.
Uh-huh.
Couple interviews over the weekend, so it's
yeah.
Great.
All right. Well, thanks for having me back.
And this time, we also have Vanessa. And how do you say your last name?
Cannell.
Cannell.
Yeah.
And the show is Oh, That Wily Snake. And I will say I was not what I was expecting.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it would be anybody would expect.
Someone expects.
It.
Yeah.
It's very hard when trying to write up like a blurb for the show. To encapsulate it,
mm-hmm.
and to make it sound
in a way that yeah,
in a way that sounds honest and truthful and still fun and still yeah. serious. Like it's a fun, funny show, but then it's about something that's not fun and funny.
It is fun and exactly, mm-hmm. It is very fun, and it ends in this very poignant and very biting place. That's really it hits really really hard in a way that I was not expecting until. 7/8 of the way through the play.
Yeah.
Although the story is very obvious once you're watching, you realize, oh, this is this really great allegory for another really great allegory.
Yeah,
and,
right.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, it's good, you know, like the play for me, it should be working on different levels. I mean, everyone wants their plays to work on different levels, but like,
mm-hmm.
but there are some people that don't. You know, that don't get that it's an allegory,
oh,
an allegory
yeah.
or anything, you know? So the fact
it
that you got it,
seems like it's something
kudos.
Quite obvious, but a lot of people
yeah.
don't see it.
Maybe it's because I just saw the Holy Land Experience.
Maybe that, yeah.
yeah.
yeah, yeah.
And so it's on the brain.
But the thing is, though, I think that even when people don't get it, it's still fun. Like, it's still
yeah.
funny.
Yes.
And it's a couple negotiating something,
mm-hmm.
you know? And
oh, yeah.
yeah.
People have not seen that aspect of it and have still had fun with it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so it's interesting to see how different people perceive the same story.
So I want to talk about that personal relationship as well, but one thing that I'm just so curious about is the absurd pieces in there that stand in for all these, the Brussels sprout for an apple and
right.
Aruba for, I'm not sure exactly
well,
what Aruba is, but.
I think Aruba is that, like, fantasy destination, you know, when you haven't had sex or if you have had sex. Aruba is that place, you know, I think of it as like Club Med Aruba or something. Like it's like a sex place. Island. It's exotic, it's tropical, it's where all your dreams and fantasies can come true. And like if he can just take her there, then she will like live up to his fantasy, and he believes it's probably her fantasy too. So it's a stand-in for some wild, sensual, exotic place.
But what about these other things, the bed, the
Well, I think that like
I'm trying to remember all the other
yeah.
little pieces that are in there that are were they intentionally supposed to be absurd or do you find them?
They're like for me like everything has a you know nothing's just absurd for absurdity's sake.
Okay, that's interesting.
Everything's true to the world that they're in and that And by that way, that clanging, it's just, for anyone who's listening, that's...
For those of you who listen to the Amios
yeah.
podcast, we are back at Under St. Mark's.
We are broadcasting from hell, actually. Minions just over the ridge.
Working away.
Working away is. We'll be getting back to work momentarily ourselves. I feel like, you know, like, sex is so often compared to, like, flying. And, you know, people have dreams of flying. They're like, oh, that's sex if you dream of flying. And so it seemed natural... that if he wants to get her not just into bed, but into his flying bed to take her on this trip to Aruba, to this this fantastical, wonderful place. But of course, she has made a promise to somebody to not go to Aruba. And but she's very curious about it. She really probably would like to go. But
how was it playing Edith? And there is that conflict that Martin just mentioned. Like she wants to go, but she says, no, I'm not curious. But then at one point she says, I looked at the brochure.
Yeah.
And this trifold brochure, which was a lovely moment.
Yeah. And it's that, you know, it's that innocence in sort of a young woman that is curious about these things, and then it's the question of, you know, where does the responsibility fall, you know, in terms of where they end up going and with the story in the end. But it's that sweetness of that innocence, but you're allowed to be curious about these things, and it sounds fun, and so it was kind of fun to play with in that regard. And
it's that tension that's really fascinating between the idea of a modesty but curiosity,
and you know, and she's a young woman, and so she's like a touch aware of her own sexuality, a touch, just enough to be a bit curious about it, but not really knowing what she could do with it. And so it was fun playing that, and then where it ends, making it that much more of a fall, because she went there, and then you see this bit of light go out, this bit of innocence get taken away. And it gets taken away, and yet at the same time, eyes have been opened slightly, you know? So it's this interesting place of losing something but gaining the tree of knowledge.
And gaining knowledge.
Gaining
knowledge means losing innocence.
Yeah.
In that allegory, that's kind of what happens here, mm-hmm. in this place that they land in the middle of the show, when the bed has gone off course and crash landed because she started thinking about Marcel, her fiancé.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is there innocence in, is it Edmund?
Edmund, yeah.
Where is it, do you find any innocence in him?
Oh yeah, yeah. I feel like Edmund is, he totally has designs to take her on this trip.
Yes.
Let's say just like any guy who's like, yeah, I'm going to take this girl out, and I'm going to kind of like, you know, I'm going to flirt with her, and I'm going to get her kind of excited. And I imagine they've been friends, I don't know where from where, but like, he can sense that she's sort of like flirts back a little. She's interested, and he's thinking like, if he can just create the right mood, she'll be good to go, you know. And I believe that when he shows up, he has no idea that she has a fiance. He really thinks that like this is going to be good, and so he's a little doubtful. But then she's so insistent that he stay, and she seems to be like kind of blowing off her fiance, that then he's like, all right, let's go. And I do believe the whole time, even if he's kind of like trying to manipulate her to get her to go on this flight, on his flying bed to Aruba, that he believes that she will be happy if she just gets there. If he could just like get her to get over her hang-ups, if you just do this, then you'll realize it's no big deal and it's a lot of fun, and like just like stop believing all these things that her fiance, who is God, or who, whatever this person that one makes promises to, this person who has told her all these things that aren't true, it seems, reasons you shouldn't go to Aruba, you know, your ears are going to fall off, and that you shouldn't drink champagne because you'll get the bends, and all these things, you know, like, just like
another thing that I was thinking about.
Just like religions kind of have all these strictures and rules to stop you from doing things, but maybe the argument can be made, those rules are there to kind of keep order and to allow someone to move at the pace they want to move at. And so my character forces her, ultimately, literally holds her down and forces her to complete this trip. And then I think he is shocked and surprised at himself for how this has ended. And she is traumatized for having been brought to this place, and for having now her fiance is lost and her innocence is lost. But I think I am too, because I'm the one who's done it. I'm the perpetrator, and I don't think I look at myself that way. I didn't intend to be that. I thought this was going to be a good time. Mm.
So the snake, in a way, is almost just insidious. For a time, I thought perhaps Edmund was the snake.
I think he's both the snake and Adam, kind of, you know, both.
Yeah, it almost feels like the snake is just, you know, kind of in his nature.
Yeah.
As opposed to being like a direct representation of, look, this is the snake.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that was really interesting to follow. It certainly kept kept things, instead of being very straight, like, okay, we're right. watching the Garden of Eden story.
Yeah, right, yeah.
It was
right.
not that at all. I think the madcap nature of it, too, helps to
oh,
keep
yeah.
from that falling into that trap. But you said men...
I just think men have that, you know, the dual quality often of
yes.
being the snake and being mm-hmm. Adam, you know, and I mean... In a typical way, it's not all men, and of course some women can be snake too.
Yeah,
but in this particular play, I think the male character, my character, is both.
What about the actual in the performance of the play? There's a lot of like spatial work, like almost like Spolin, like you know, you hold out you get the Brussels sprout, and you hold the Brussels sprout, and the Brussels sprout moves, and
yeah.
we track these items, the bottle of champagne. Marcel,
yeah,
indeed.
Right.
So was this a practical consideration? Can you just talk a little bit about the process of creating the show using that idea?
For me, I feel like I believe in minimalism on stage, you know, and that if you either like represent everything, if you've got a huge budget, or if you don't, just pare it down in central things. So the fact that the only thing on stage besides us is a bed means that the focus is on the bed. The bed is the main star. And any other prop, if we were to actually physicalize it, would dilute the power of the bed being the only thing on stage. So, and then you don't really need it. Like, you know, the champagne, it's here and then it's gone for the rest of the
yeah.
show. You know, and a Brussels sprout, you know, it can exist in people's imaginations. And so I feel like, All these other props are mimed to give like more like power to the bed, more focus to it.
Well, and it is all, you know, within the state of a dream. So then
yeah.
to have something like physical, I feel would just completely take away from that and would confuse that, you know.
I would imagine that like this show is the dream that they both are continuously having every night or every day, or daydream, that like they can't, this is the manifestation of something that actually happened to them in the real life, and that he, you know, raped her, essentially forced her to do this thing she didn't want to do, and now neither of them can get past it, neither of them can stop thinking about it, neither of them can stop dreaming about it, and this is the manifestation, this is how it manifests itself in their dreams. So in that same way, not having props and whatnot,
yeah.
having this fantastical
lends
stuff
itself
is
to that.
More
yeah.
dreamlike.
This is, Martin, you wrote the show.
Yeah.
And did you write this with the intent that you and Vanessa would perform it, or was it just a, like, I'm going to write this two-person script? Because it's very much out of the realm, or at least from the
yeah,
work
yeah.
I know of yours,
yeah.
it's very different than what you've done before.
Yeah, well, interestingly enough, I wrote this play 18 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah. And I got an MFA at Columbia University, and then I wrote it while I was there, and kind of like did it, you know, for a long weekend type thing, and I played this character. It was just 3 days, and then it sat in the proverbial drawer for, you know, 18 years, and then I do these one person shows, these storytelling things like you saw, and I tour a lot of fringe festivals, and I was touring across Canada, and then I thought to myself, in addition to doing this solo show, I'd really love to do this play, you know, and I'd really love to bring this play back out. As I remember it 18 years ago, I think the play was good. I enjoyed it, you know, and I wonder if it still is good, and it would be good to actually give the play some life, because it didn't really ever get to have a life. And so then I met Vanessa while I was touring in 2010 across Canada, and then asked her if she would be in the show, and it was like, just sort of took a chance. Like, I'd never seen her act, and I just knew that, like, it'd be fun to spend some time together. And so then I said, hey, how about next summer, 2011,
we
spend 3 months
tour.
Touring a show together?
Why not?
Yeah.
And it seems that, you know, now here we are in 2012, and you're still doing it, so obviously
yeah.
it was not a failure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
so
good.
We did 7 different fringe festivals with this show. And it was it's interesting. I mean, I've been just touring by myself, so it was nice to have the experience with somebody else, and it's really fun. I mean, everyone knows it's fun acting, right? It's fun to be able to act and not just be telling a story straight to the audience, to be like getting into like banter with somebody on stage, and and this particular play is fun too because it's fantastical and absurd. You can really like ricochet between emotions, you know. you're allowed to like go from extreme like manic happiness to like sudden intense, you know, desire or whatever. Like it's, you're allowed to bounce all over the place because it's been established that this world is, and these people in it are a bit manic depressive, perhaps they're a bit bipolar in their behavior.
Any changes from the script from 18 years ago to now, or even from when you started performing to now, or has it?
Yeah,
it
has changes. Mm-hmm. I mean, initially, I think Martin sent me the script, and then we had some conversations when we first did a reading and when we were first starting to work it, and like anything, like I don't think you would really revisited it in the 18 years. So there were just certain things that you know got cut sort of right away. And then over the summer, little things, little tweaks that we didn't ever even talk about, but just as the show evolved over the course of the summer, we ended up with some changes, some slight changes here and there.
Yeah, like the ending. The ending is something that we figured out like halfway through the summer. It used to have, it would end in the same sort of way and that they're in the same place or at the beginning. But now it ends with the dialogue being exactly the same at the end as it is at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And That wasn't the way it was.
Yeah.
It was different dialogue.
It's very effective.
Oh, and it works so much better.
It's much cleaner.
And it's one of those things that when you realize it, like all of a sudden,
you're like,
you get that idea.
This is so much better.
This is a recurring dream. Why exactly the same dialogue? Why is it just almost the same? But what, you know?
And that's the fun part of doing a show so many times like that is you get to just have it continuously evolve and discover more things as you go along. I mean, that was one of the biggest surprises for me, was doing it so many times. Initially, I thought, I wonder if this is going to get boring.
Right.
And the challenge is going to be keeping it fresh, and you're going to have to really focus on staying in the moment because you're going to be bored. And I was shocked that never happened. Like, it kept on. We did it, you know, 43 or 44 times or so over the course of the summer, and still, you know, the last few shows that we did, there would still be slight shifts. I mean, essentially, the story that we were telling was always the same in its intent, but the slight shifts in places, and all of a sudden walk off stage and we'd be like, oh, there was a new layer there, you know? And then you think, wow, like, still, that's amazing. You know, it's so much fun to just constantly have a show evolving, but still, you know, it's still truth at the core.
Sounds to me like the mark of a good play and the mark of good players.
Thanks.
Thank you both very much.
Thank you for doing the podcast.
Thanks so much. Yes, it's fun.
Any parting thoughts before I don't want to cut you off if you had any other words to.
How about that for a party? I don't know. It's a lot. It's just a lot of fun to perform it. Like I just have a lot of fun, you know. Because you just get to, as I said, ricochet around and literally flail around at one point, you know, like, and just, it's open to so much interpretation.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was finding myself putting things onto it and saying, like, no, I don't, is that what he's saying?
Yeah.
Or is that me?
Yeah.
And that was very interesting to watch and to find people and myself and Vanessa and your character as well, but especially in Martin as a man watching this. There's some scary truths that come out of this.
Yeah. So it's fun to like hear people laughing, you know, but then towards the end, like people aren't sure whether they should be laughing anymore, you know, and different nights you get people laughing all the way to the end practically.
Yeah.
You know, and other nights, no.
Yeah.
And I would expect them not to be laughing to the end, but sometimes people don't get that, like, oh no, this is not funny anymore.
There has been
awkward laughter.
Some people, that's how they deal.
Yeah, I know, yeah. But in all cases, it's interesting, and it's fun to, like, talk about afterwards. And,
yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, congrats on an excellent show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for coming.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Great.
Awesome.
Thanks to Martin and Vanessa for taking the time to speak with me after the show, and sorry for the clanging at the beginning of the episode. For those of you who heard the Amios podcast, we were once again at the Under St. Mark's Theater at St. Mark's and First Ave. But The clanging didn't interrupt the show, and I'm sure it won't be a problem for you either. When you check out Oh, That Wily Snake, you've got two more chances this Thursday and Friday, February 9th and 10th, beginning at 8 p.m. For tickets, visit horsetrade.info. As always, thanks for listening into the podcast, and please feel free to send any and all comments and questions to me via email at robby@gocashowpodcast.com. Until next time, go see a show.
Woohoo! Woo! Yeah!
Yeah! Yeah!